Brad Sesmat Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Good Wednesday. Thanks for being with us. There's a really cool story that is, I don't know if it's finishing up in the Valley right now, but Jim Harbaugh had a sleepover last night with a Arizona kid, Connor Murphy over at Brophy. The Jim Harbaugh recruiting stuff, that's just awesome. Bruce Arians, quote, Cardinals offensive line getting their ass kicked as of late. How about that? It's the week of the NFC title game, and the coach decides to drop a bomb on his line. That's good. Charlie Casserly is going to be with us here at about 10:20. Charlie is a terrific guy to talk to, and a former Redskin and Texas GM. I go all the way back on Charlie Casserly with Bobby Bethard in San Diego. Bobby and Charlie through the Redskins tree. And so when Eric told me Charlie Casserly is coming on board, I'm a thumbs up on that one. So I want to talk to him about the X's and O's around the game. And I know that he has talked about the Josh Norman, Larry Fitzgerald potential matchup. I don't know if that's going to happen, but we'll talk with Charlie Casserly. That is coming up in about 10 minutes. Seth Joyner is going to be with us. So earlier this week, I was with Seth at a charity event. And he's pulling out his iPhone and he's making the screen big and he's diagramming stuff. And we're like on the tee box, like, Seth, you got to hit the ball, man. And he's so passionate. And I want to talk to Seth about the whole persona of Cam Newton. Okay. Cam Newton signals first down on a third and one from the 35 to the 36 yard line on his own side of the field. He's just, that's him. He's clearly a brand builder. That's what Cam Newton is. He makes great plays, don't get me wrong. But he gets that in the business side, when there's no football going on, I'm going to make huge jack by doing my thing. And he's very open about it, I think. So I want to talk to Seth about that. And also the Cardinals and what they have to do to take out Greg Olsen, some of the X's and O's. Because if you look at the wide receiving core of Carolina, there's not a name that really scares you when you look at it. But then you get over to their tight end and you say to yourself, Greg Olsen. Greg Olsen is the guy that's killed people most of the season. And so we're going to talk to Seth about taking away his guy. Eric is with us today. Did you by chance see the Mighty Suns play last night?
Saw the fourth quarter.
Really? You were the only one.
And by the way, I'm with you almost every day. I like how you always say, Eric is with us today. Like, I come in for my monthly appearance.
Sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, I'm always here.
During football season, we never know.
Yeah, you never know. I could be on a plane headed to some outpost.
Yeah, please give this context, which I am. You never know.
Yeah, I watched the fourth quarter of the Suns. I had a high school game that I was shooting last night. But, they made it close.
Okay.
The game wasn't close, but right. They made it close.
Where are we at here on this? We wanted to have Paul Coro on today, and this was just too easy.
He's having dental work done. As you said, he's been having dental work done since when was the first game?
Gosh.
Late October?
This was, when Eric said he's having dental work, I just went, oh, he's had dental work all season. You know, that's too easy with this team.
Yeah, sometimes these jokes on this show just literally tell themselves.
Because we would like to talk about, and I'll pay attention to everything going on in the Valley. I'm not going to sit here and do an hour X's and O's on just Cardinals, Panthers. Never, ever, ever will we do that. There's lots of things going on, and obviously that's the main story. But I keep expecting this to be the day where I get the Suns are going to hold a press conference for Jeff Hornacek, and he's going to mercifully bow out, or they're going to do a mercy departure for him, and they don't do it. And you see nobody at the arena. This is the worst. Easily, this is the worst it's ever been. Easily. Because back when the team started 0-12 or 0-13, I camped out in a van waiting for them to win a game. Cotton was still alive. Danny was in place. There was a real change in the team. They bottomed out. The guys in the Barkley trade didn't want to be here at all. And so they were bottoming out, but they had Jerry in control and Brian was coming into his own. So there was a lot there that you looked at and said, oh, okay, this happens. You have to retool. You have to reload. It's like the Cardinals. Guys, 3 years ago, 2 years ago, the Cardinals were awful, awful, with a capital A, awful. And look at how quickly they turned it around with good leadership. Okay. I don't see, is Roberts play to tear the thing all the way to the ground and then sell it, as some would hope that he would? I don't think that's the play for him, because he's already made gobs of money on this transaction. He's a banker.
And you can get a Suns ticket now for $10. Oh. I saw on Twitter advertising as low as $10 to see a Suns game.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's easy just to say, well, forget about them. No, because I care. It's like the John Scott story with the Coyotes. You know, I haven't talked much about the Coyotes here this season, because other than the kids and Shane having a very good year, and Shane's going to have to make a tough decision at the end of the season, whether to stick around here or not. We want him to start and finish with the same team, just like Larry Fitzgerald. I'm one of those guys. I'd like to see that happen. John Scott was dumped by the Coyotes. A fan vote got out, and the fans decided through the power of social media that John Scott, who's nothing more than an enforcer, who's just a guy, a nice guy, by all accounts, and he ended up being elected to be the captain of the Western Conference All-Stars. So he's made a mockery of the system. The Coyotes end up trading him. He goes over to Montreal. They send him down to the minor leagues, and he still is going to be the captain. So the NHL can try to bury a guy all they want because this is disrespecting the sport and all that nonsense. It's not his fault. It's fans. Fans want to see who fans want to see. A guy can be just dreadful, but if it's an all-star game, they're going to do whatever they want if he's popular. Somebody said, hey, this dude over here is an enforcer slash goon, however you want to describe him. And so the Coyotes say, enough of this. We're getting him out of here. And the Canadiens send him down, and he's still going to be the guy. That's a really interesting Arizona story to me. Marvin Bagley popped up yesterday, and I was talking to Eric yesterday afternoon that I'm sick of tired of talking about Marvin Bagley. He's not playing high school basketball anymore in Arizona. But when you see the player that may have gone down as the greatest big man to ever come out of our state as just a freshman, I had never seen a better player last year, ever. And he was being recruited by everybody in the nation. And it was all set up for us to have 3 years of Thursday nights, Tuesday nights, Friday nights. You've got to go watch this kid because he's going to be the next great one. It's like Kevin Garnett when he was a kid at Farragut in Chicago. People wanted to go see Kevin Garnett. Well, for some reason now, he's on his fourth school, because yesterday the school he tried to enroll in, or he's enrolled in, to try to be cleared, he was ruled ineligible for the year because it was nothing more than an athletic move. And I got to tell you, it seems to me the best move for him would be to head back to Corona, because I understand he's not even academically eligible anymore, and he's a good kid, and he's good in the classroom. But he went to this Hillcrest prep thing, and then he gets run out of California. So I've got some thoughts on that. If I have time for it today, I may just end up writing about it, because I've not seen a bigger tragedy. Okay, there's sickness stories, and there's health stories. Pat Tillman's story is obviously the biggest tragedy of that scope. But when I'm talking about a high school kid being given poor advice, I mean, beyond poor advice, whatever the motive was, the kid was being recruited by every major program in the nation. So it's not about let's get him discovered. The kid was well-liked on campus at Corona del Sol. So it's not about the fit. So what was it? Why is it he's on his fourth school and he's not academically or basketball eligible this year? And guys that have covered the sport, or the people that really care around this state, tell me in messages they've never seen a bigger tragedy or travesty. And it's like, oh, no, no, we're just misunderstood. That's the vibe I'm getting, at least. Ridiculous. It's just ridiculous, that story. All right, Charlie Casserly is next. Former Redskins and Texans GM, now NFL Network analyst. X's and O's, the building of a roster, and much more with the great Charlie Casserly. That's next, then Seth Joyner. I'm Brad Sussmat, sports360az.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. Our television show tonight at 7, 10, 1, and 7 a.m. tomorrow morning on Fox Sports Arizona. Thanks for being with us. Charlie Casserly, former Redskins and Texans GM, NFL Network analyst. You can see Charlie on NFL Networks around the NFL at 3 o'clock Mountain Time, NFL Total Access at 5 p.m. Mountain Time. Let's talk about the receiving part of this game, because, Charlie, there's been a lot made of Larry Fitzgerald straight up against Josh Norman. That all sounds good to fill notebooks and talk about on shows like yours and mine during the week. But is that really realistic this time of year with injuries on both sides of the football in the defensive backfields?
Well, here's the way I look at the thing, because it is a sexy topic there, I guess, if you will. First of all, I think Norman can cover Fitzgerald athletically. I haven't seen Norman play in the slot, so that's what I don't know. Outside, he can cover him there. Where Fitz will beat him is Fitz is a savvy route runner. He can be quick out of his break, and his body gives you separation from the defender. On timing routes, he'll be impossible to stop. However, Norman is quicker, faster, more athletic, and certainly he can cover him one-on-one on normal-type routes there. So, but again, Fitz will get the initial separation. Norman will close quickly. However, in the big picture, Carolina plays a lot of zone defense. That's mm-hmm. really what they are. And, you know, they've lost a couple of corners now through the course of the year, Tillman and Benrique, if that's how you pronounce it, Benrique, I think it is. But anyway, excuse my pronunciation of the young man's name. So now they got Cortland Finnegan, and they've got Robert McClain. And then, of course, McClain's been with him, and he's played. What I'm getting to the point is Arizona has much more depth at receiver than Carolina has at corner, and their safeties are average cover guys. So I don't think that Carolina can afford to put Norman on one man and play man across the board on the other receiver. So I think you're going to see a lot of zone on Sunday.
Okay, let's flip it around then. What do the Cardinals have to do against Greg Olsen? Justin Bethel was clearly a target last week and the weeks before with the injury to Tyrann Mathieu, but Greg Olsen for the Cardinals to try to take him out.
Well, Bethel will be a target every week, okay? I mean, because, first of all, Patrick Peterson's on the other side. So let's start there. Whoever you line up there is going to be the target. But Bethel is not a top corner, so that's why he's going to be targeted. And whether Matthew's in the game or not wouldn't make any difference to me, okay? I think the linebackers from we're talking about Olsen, okay? I think what you got to do is bang Olsen at the line of scrimmage. Don't let him get off the line of scrimmage and delay him that way. He's a mismatch, okay, for the safeties, and he's a mismatch for the linebackers. So what you're going to have to do is bang him at the line of scrimmage, disrupt his route, get the timing off, okay, and then whoever's covering him in the back end will have a better chance of covering him.
Cam Newton, have you seen anybody like him through your years in front office, just what he brings to the field?
Well, he's unique from this point of view. I haven't seen an offense, and this is Mike Shula. You've got to give him a lot of credit here. They have increased the number of runs and the volume of runs from last year to this year, so they have the most creative running attack you have in the NFL. And what they've done, they basically said, you know what, we're going to use Newton as a runner. We're not going to worry about whether he gets hurt or not. And I'm sure they didn't sit there and say that, but they're going to say, listen, this guy's an asset, and we got to use him. So you have a lot of creative runs with him and the running attack. They're very difficult to defend against the run. Arizona has to hope with their blitz scheme they can get him off schedule early in it so they get out of the run. But when you blitz a lot, Carolina's going to pop some runs, so that's going to happen. But if Arizona just sits there, they can't stop this running game. They've got to do something different with the blitzes to win first down and force Carolina to throw the ball. That's what you want to do. You want to force them to throw the ball, then keep Cam in the pocket, and that's how you're going to have to play defensively against them if you're going to win.
Yeah, and it's interesting, Charlie, because the receivers of the Panthers, they lose Kelvin Benjamin earlier in the season. It's not a receiving core that would strike the fear of God in you if you just looked at it on paper.
No, you're right. And then, you know, Ginn gets hurt. So it's shocking what they've been able to do. But a lot of it stems from the running attack and being so versatile with it. And you got to defend Cam Newton. So defending Cam Newton takes an extra defender away from pass coverage. So it does open things up for the passing game.
If you're looking just at X and O, who do you like on Sunday?
Carolina's a better team. When you go break the position down, okay, they're better. They have more talent at more position groups than Arizona does. I like Carolina for this reason. Okay, ignore the fact they're home. That's always an advantage. I don't think Arizona is going to be able to run the ball. This is going to be a one-dimensional game. Okay, and I think Arizona is going to go bombs away a certain part of the game. They always do that. What I'm concerned about is what I saw in Carson Palmer, and I love Carson Palmer. I've been one of the few people that has, no matter what, where he was in his career, highs and lows, this guy can play. You just watch him throw the ball. He's terrific. But he will tend to force some balls. Now, most of this year he hasn't done it, but he did it last Saturday. That bothered me. So now what we're saying, you can't run the ball. It's a big game. I'm trying to make a play. It's an aggressive offense downfield. He's going to force balls. That would be my worry if I'm a Cardinal fan on that part there. Because when you have an offense that's built on the big play and they don't get it, sometimes they don't have the patience to go up and down the field that you have to do.
Do you look at him and think that there's something wrong with his finger more than what we're being told out here in Arizona?
You know, unless you see a guy throw the ball live, it's hard to judge the true velocity of the ball. I'm just watching the film, which gives me accuracy and decision-making. To me, the mistakes I saw last Saturday were decision-making that I've seen in the past with him trying to make plays when they weren't necessarily there. Now, yes, he did miss some throws that you're kind of scratching your head at. Maybe that was the finger. I can't judge that.
Is the monkey off a player's back when they win that first playoff game, from your view?
Well, it's one monkey. now he's got a second monkey, okay? If he wins, he eliminates that one. If he loses, well, he couldn't win the championship game.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Let's face it. He's an MVP candidate. He's one of them. Certainly he's done more throwing the ball than Cam Newton has by far. But Cam Newton's running ability and what that's done for the offense is really what puts him into the discussion.
Appreciate your time and your insight, as always. Charlie, appreciate your time and your insight, as always. Thanks.
Great to be with you. Bye now.
Charlie Casserly. You can see him on NFL Networks around the NFL, 3 o'clock Mountain Time, and NFL Total Access, 5 o'clock Mountain Time as well. Seth Joyner on the other side, sports360az.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic. AZ Central Sports, I'm Brad Sussmat. Seth Joyner with us now for a couple of minutes. I was playing golf with Seth earlier this week, and he was pulling out his iPhone. I believe it's an iPhone, and he was enlarging the screen and showing everybody what should have happened in the Cardinals game or what's happening around the NFL. Seth, of course, tremendous Pro Bowl linebacker, Super Bowl champ, and he joins us for a couple of minutes about this game. Seth, if you're looking at the Cardinals and the way that they should attack Cam Newton, you're James Betcher. I'm going to put it on you. What do you do against Cam Newton on Sunday?
Well, I think, you know, you need to make Cam Newton one-dimensional. And to do that, you know, Jonathan Stewart is going to be the key. He can't come out and have a big game like he had against Seattle last week. They've got to get the run under control first. And then worry about Cam and putting him in long passing situations. You know, they've got enough pass rushers. They've got enough man-to-man coverage across the board to be able to bring the type of pressures that James Beecher likes to bring. But you got to make them one-dimensional. You know, they cannot come out and have the ability to run the ball and then bring play action alive as well.
When you're taking on Cam Newton, do you want to see him throw the football because he is such a threat running the ball? You know what I mean by that? People are trying to figure out ways to take him out. Would you rather see him try to throw it 30, 35 times a game?
Well, absolutely. I think if you can make – if you go and you look at his numbers, I think, you know, he's – they're really a 50-50 team. You know, they're probably winning – they're probably running somewhere in the neighborhood of 50 to 60 plays, you know, and they're pretty much 50-50. If you go over the last couple of games that he's played, I would venture – to believe that I don't think he's thrown the ball over 30 times, but a handful of times this year. So if you can get him in a situation where he has to throw the ball, now you don't want him running around, but you also, you know, you want to put him in a situation where he's got to pass the ball, because I don't think that they're that talented, you know, at the wide receiver position. I think that the Cardinals definitely have the advantage there. The only issue that the Cardinals are going to have, they're going to have to figure out a way. Find out a way to you know, take Greg Olsen out of the game. And I think the way that you do that is you put a linebacker, you put a defensive end on him and beat him up at the line of scrimmage to try to throw off the timing of route.
It's really interesting in Greg Olsen's part, because he is really the offense down there. They've had injury at wide receivers. They haven't had anybody really jump forward. He is the pass attack for them.
Well, you know, when they lost Kelvin Benjamin at the beginning of the year with torn ACL, that was the worry, that they weren't going to be deep enough at the wide receiver position. You know, Ted Ginn has played, you know, much better for them than he played for anybody else at any other time during his career. Devin Funchess is starting to come along a little bit, but you know, Greg Olsen is his go-to guy. You know, and it just amazes me every single game that I watch that teams don't come up with a way to take him away. I mean, I've seen, well, on Sunday, Seattle had him doubled on a seam route in the red zone. They still completed the ball. It's like, you know, things like that just can't happen. You know, if you're going to have a guy doubled, then you've got to have, and he's the type of player, he's like Larry Fitzgerald. You can't bracket him because he's got more speed than meets the eye. He's faster than what you think. You have to high-low him. You got to have one guy to beat him up and trail underneath, and you got to have one guy over the top. The inside guy, the guy underneath is going to play all inside routes, and the guy over the top is going to take outside routes and anything over the top. And I think that's the way you take a guy like Greg Olsen out of the football game.
Talking with Seth Joyner, Jonathan Stewart, you brought him up earlier. He doesn't really get as much run, I think, around the NFL as he should for his position. What do you see?
I mean, he's always been an effective runner. You know, his issue, his problem has always been it's hard for him to get through a complete season, you know, and stay healthy. You know, and they had Stewart. I'm trying to remember the other kid's name that went to Pittsburgh, but they always had a two-headed monster, and they made the decision to go with Jonathan Stewart this year and Mike Tolbert. So, I mean, they've got some talent. They've got some beef in the backfield, and Jonathan Stewart is a much faster running back than most people, you know, think or believe he is. But, you know, when he's healthy, he's a handful, you know. And then when you factor in this read option that they run, that Cam can pull it at any second, they almost force you to play, you know, 7-8 men in the box so that you can take care of, you know, everybody across the board. You can take care of the dive, and you have someone on the quarterback. And if they want to get fancy and bring a guy in motion, that you have someone on the third option as well.
You're talking about D'Angelo Williams, I think, the back that we're searching for. In terms of, when you look at Cam Newton do all the first downs and all of the theatrics, when you played, would that have lasted very long? I mean, would have been one play where your helmet's right between the number?
Well, you know, the day is different, you know, and there's two pieces to it. The first piece is, you know, if you go back to my day, you could police that stuff a lot easier because the game was so much more physical. So if a quarterback wanted to play those theatrics, then you had 11 guys on defense that was after his head, and, you know, he quickly got the message, you know, that you're not going to be doing this. The other thing is, you know, we live in a NFL player branded era,
right?
You know, so the more noise you can make, the more fingers you can point at yourself, the more attention that you can bring to yourself, you know, there's just greater opportunities, you know, and these kids are taking advantage of it. You know, a third thing is, you know, Cam Newton is the, you know, is the millennial. He's the new quarterback, I would say, of the NFL. And that doesn't mean that the new prototype, I should say. That doesn't mean that all the quarterbacks that are coming in are going to act like he acts now. You know, I love his individuality. Mm-hmm. You know, I've always said, if you don't want guys showboating on you, you don't want guys, you know, acting like he acts, then you stop him. If you can't stop him, then what's the sense of complaining? Because the only reason he's doing all that is because he's making first downs, he's scoring touchdowns, he's throwing touchdowns, he's running for touchdowns. So if you don't want to see it, stop it. Don't complain about it. Just stop it. Because, I mean, he's playing the game the way he's always played it. You know, in this age of young football players, they're going to draw attention to him, you know, with Twitter and Facebook and all the other social media things that are out there. There's a way for them to generate revenue from doing those types of things and drawing attention to themselves, and they're smart enough to brand themselves and take advantage of it.
Okay, he's doing this as a 25-year-old, and he's doing it on a team that went 15-1. Is it different if he's doing it as a 30-year-old and the team is 7-9? You know what I mean by that? Like, it's easy right now.
Right, but I think as he gets older, he matures, I believe that, you know, some of this stuff will change. And you, sometimes, Brad, you just never know. For some guys, that is the fire. That is the gas that ignites them, so to speak. you know, maybe that's just the way he's wired. You know, if he doesn't play with that kind of intensity, if he doesn't play with that kind of enthusiasm, you know, is he the Cam Newton that we see week in and week out? Is he the Cam Newton that we see that's got this team to 16-1? You know, I don't know. You know, you're asking him maybe to be someone that he is, and I don't know. Maybe when he's 30 years old, he's still got them and vigor in him, and this is the way he's going to play the game as long as he plays. Who knows? But, you know, it's definitely a different world. For us old schoolers, you know, a lot of us look at it and say, hey, you know, this is just not the way you do it. You know, the great ones never did it this way. But, you know, he's rewriting he's doing it his way. And he's, you know, writing his chapter of history as far as the NFL is concerned as the NFL quarterback. You know, and you can't argue with 16-1.
Before I let you go, if you're Carolina and you see Justin Bethel, because Green Bay clearly went after Justin Bethel, and Seattle the week before went after Justin Bethel, should the Cardinals be concerned about Justin Bethel being out on the field? He's a Pro Bowl special teamer, but clearly he's become the target on that side of the football.
Well, I think any time that you have injuries, you know, your second-team guys are second-team for a reason. You know, your starters are starters for a reason. You always hope to be able to build a roster, and I think that's the one thing that Steve Keim and Bruce Arians have been able to do is build a roster with a high level of talent, you know, even your second and third tier guys. But anytime that you have starters that go out, you know, teams are going to test the backups, because throughout the season, the starters are the one that get the majority of the reps. You know, the second and third team guys, those are show team guys for the offense. Those are special team guys. They don't get a whole bunch of, you know, reps. They don't get a whole bunch of looks. They don't get a whole bunch of work. So, yeah, you know, I mean, if you're the offensive coordinator for the Carolina Panthers in passing situations, you know, you're definitely looking for those matchups. And if the Cardinals aren't a defense that really, you know, flops their corners over matches on wide receivers, then I would imagine you can look forward to seeing Greg Olsen line up at wide receiver on Justin Bethel's side as well, to create even more pressure or to draw the double team and get the extra guy over there to open it up for someone else.
Great X and O talk as always, Seth. Appreciate the time. Thanks.
Always, Brad. Take care, man.
Seth Joyner with us there for a couple of minutes. Appreciate his time and insight. We're back with more after this time out. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic. AZ Central Sports. Going to catch up with Seth Joyner. What is it, Eric? Last week we had Todd Heap in. Seth this week. So all these former players that are bumping around the valley that they want to be broadcasters, or they want. Tony Mandridge came by, and we've seen Scott Peters from now and then, and Jake is with us every week. Jake will be with us tomorrow, Jake Plummer, and many others. We're in this space where there's things that come up that I want to make you guys aware of, because this doesn't happen very often where you have a team trying to get to the finals of anything. Doesn't matter if it's a Super Bowl, if it's the Diamondbacks, when the Suns were the Suns, and all that. So tomorrow night out at Marley's, Tim Hovick, my buddy over at Santan Ford, in the Arizona Ford dealers, they're putting together the biggest Red Rage tomorrow night. And Michael Bidwell is going to be out there. It sounds like Larry Fitzgerald is going to be out there. Calais Campbell. It's a two-hour show tomorrow night. So that'll be good. So if you want to head out, that'll be tomorrow night. And that will be over at Marley's off of Chandler Boulevard, 3095 West Chandler Boulevard. Marley's in Chandler tomorrow night, if you're looking for something to do to get all caught up in the excitement around the Cardinals as they try to get to the Super Bowl. Okay, so from all of that around the Cardinals, there's a few other things that are going on. This story that I'm going to get to next, I just love this. We talked about it last week of what Jim Harbaugh is doing to recruit football players. Now, Eric, have you ever been recruited in anything before?
Just to get a new credit card. That's about the only recruitment I've been a part of.
Do you think I recruited you to come work here? Or was it just you and I knowing each other? Did I have to do anything special?
I never really looked at it as you were recruiting me.
Yeah?
But yeah, I guess you could, technically it does fall under that that umbrella?
So I think I met you at a lunch. I know I met you. I met you at a lunch over at Joe's Farm Grill and laid out that I got this idea, I got this thing, and it could end up going terribly wrong and all that stuff. And you still decided to come, and it's gone terribly wrong anyways. So it's fine. Jim Harbaugh, all he's trying to do is recruit kids to come play football for him, okay? But his idea of getting to get to kids came all the way to Arizona last night. So Jim Harbaugh was here in our valley last night. In fact, he still may be here in our valley for all I know. He is pursuing Connor Murphy from Brophy. And so he does what he calls sleepovers. He sleeps over at recruits' houses. This is beyond brilliant. There you see it. This was at the Murphy's house last night. It's Kyle Murphy, or not Kyle Murphy, I'm thinking the offensive lineman. Trent Murphy on the far left, Jim Harbaugh in the middle, Connor Murphy, he was recruiting there on the right. They're having a nice time at the Murphy household last night. Jim Harbaugh just hanging out. There he is arriving. It's pretty cool. There's Connor in his Brophy jacket. Now, was it Jared telling me that Jim Harbaugh used to babysit for them way back in the day? Did you hear that?
That's correct.
Okay, so he's got a tie to the family.
Do you think one of the higher-ups at Michigan said, hey, about your recruiting budget, I know you're going to be going out on the road. If there's a way we could streamline your expenses a little bit, is there a way you could maybe just sleep on floors instead of stay at the Four Seasons or the Camelback Inn?
Well, it's like this picture here. Yeah. Just watch Netflix rather than charging $9.95, to your point.
Uh-huh.
At the hotel, when you do the expense report for watching the movie, just have the Murphys put Netflix on.
And you can tell, Brad, that Harbaugh probably didn't have to check a bag. He just probably carried on a small bag and just wore sweats.
Wonder if he Ubered, you know?
Maybe.
Trent Murphy put on his Instagram, quote, when Harbaugh shows up past midnight for a sleepover at the Murphys, hashtag pillow fight. Of course he did. How do you not love this story? Okay. In this day and age of sports where we're so over the top, you know, Todd Graham will take a helicopter and bounce around and they call it the boom copter, or now they call it the boom plane. And that's his thing, is I've got a helicopter. That's my shtick. You're so important. I'm going to roll on in. How can you top Jim Harbaugh when you're recruiting somebody? I'm going to show up in my pajamas.
And great point, by the way, about the Uber driver. So you're just trying to make a little extra cash. It's 9:45 on a Tuesday night. You swing by the airport. Yeah, I need to go to North Scottsdale or wherever the Murphys live. And you're driving the Uber and you keep looking in the rearview mirror and you're like, man, that guy looks a lot like Jim Harbaugh. Do I dare say anything? Do I just keep driving?
He's got a whistle around his neck.
Are you by chance Jim Harbaugh?
He pulls out the card and it's like Harbaugh.
Yeah, story for the ages. You'll never guess who I drove around on my Uber trip.
And you're Ubering like in a Versa or something.
Probably, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, he's
we were Ubering in San Diego a couple weeks ago. It was actually Ken Thiel from here at Skyview and myself, and he ordered a black car to Uber in. And they show up, no black car. It was like a little Civic. So this poor driver, I don't know how it happened. And I look at Ken, he looks at me, I'm 6'8". I got to fold up into a Civic or something. This poor driver pushes it all the way to the back and looking at me and asks, did you play sports? Like, no, I tried. I didn't play very well. But, you know, to your point about Ubering Harbaugh around. So they're hanging out last night and they're watching Netflix. Connor Murphy puts up on his Twitter feed today, it was a Netflix and chill kind of night. At Coach Jim for UM Mish at ESPN, hashtag sleepover. And that was this morning, actually, he put it up at 7:56 this morning. What happens if Harbaugh talks in his sleep? What happens if he has, like, I don't know, if he ate something bad and he's just up and down all night in your bathroom? Then the story can go 100 different ways.
And didn't Harbaugh say when he was having the sleepover at that kicker's house that he's trying to woo away from Penn State that he's like, yeah, I'm good on the floor. I'll just, like, sleep on your floor and we can just hang out.
Does he have, like, the socks on? Is he that dude?
I'm sure.
You know, he wears the socks to bed.
It gets chilly at night this time of year in Phoenix.
Yeah, but he's from Michigan.
That's a good point.
So, but to this point, there's these poor ASU fans that are all worked up because letter of intent day is 2 weeks from today. How do you compete with Jim Harbaugh having a sleepover.
I can't see Todd Graham sleeping over at a recruit's house.
Can you?
I cannot.
No.
I couldn't even see if Norvell was here, Norvell sleeping over at a kid's house.
And beyond that, a position coach sleeping over is nothing compared. And you have to know, and I don't know if the Murphys are very humble. We've done a lot of stories around the Murphys. So they're very humble people, even though their oldest son nearly killed my son on the football field. But I can't imagine the stories that are probably happening now. They have five schools left. You have to know that those other four schools today are trying to make contact with him in some way, shape, or form. There's no way you can top that. And if they're trying to top it, it's probably ridiculous. Like, let's send him the largest cake, or let's send him something that shows how much we love him, because there's nothing that speaks louder than sleeping over at a recruit's house. Or if you're the NAIA coach, if you're Donnie Yannis over at ACU, or you're like at a Division II program, are you going to be the guy that calls and says, well, I'd like to come over and sleep at your house? Because they're going to try to rip off what Harbaugh's doing.
But originality will always win, especially in recruiting.
I understand that. But if you're recruiting Michigan, okay, and if you're at North Texas State and you're the guy that does the sleepovers, it's not like, well, I'm not going to go to Michigan anyways. This coach is paying attention to me. And further it, is the NCAA going to have to sit and have meetings? Is Urban Meyer going to come out of his skin and say something like, we should outlaw sleepovers at recruits' houses?
Yeah, I can see that happening.
I
definitely can. Especially, Meyer will red flag that, because he's going to have to – I mean, he's recruiting against – I mean, talk
head
about
–
that's it. I mean
– head-to-head.
Michigan, Ohio State, those guys are going to be
Michigan
battling
State,
for recruits.
If you're Mark D'Antonio, how are you reacting to this? How do you combat – the coach that clearly has, there's not a better in, is there? I can't think of a better way to get in with a recruit than to say, I'll sleep at your house on the floor. I want you so badly.
They could just show Michigan State's resume and how well they've
done
could. The last five
and,
or six
and, you
years.
You know what? And it could backfire. Like, as Harbaugh had a sleepover, clearly the Murphys went fine because he got up this morning. They're taking pictures and all that. I'm sure mom made him breakfast and all that stuff. But was there a recruit that said, you know what, at 4 a.m., get out of my house. I'm not coming. This is creepy that you're here next to me. And you have to know that dads think this, because dads all are about standing there at the urinal and saying, I'm bigger than you. Look at what I got. I got Jim Harbaugh at my house sleeping over for my kid. Love this story. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic. AZ Central Sports television show is tonight at 7 10, 1, 7 a.m. tomorrow morning on Fox Sports, Arizona. Have yourself a great day.